Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America's Learning English branch in Washington. Today on the program, we tell you about the competition between the United States and China to develop hypersonic weapons delivery vehicles. These vehicles travel at 5 times the speed of sound and can carry nuclear weapons. They can give a country an advantage in an arms race. Then, you will hear Jonathan Evans' technology report. This week, he tells us about the fight against cybercrime in Kenya.
Why we are learning this is to be able to secure the people who are innocently being attacked by people who know computers and to protect their data and information from getting out to the open.
And as always, we will present the making of a nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We are a little different here at VOA Learning English. Because we exist to help you learn everyday American English, we speak a little slower than normal, and we use words that are easy to understand. Listen to the program. Then practice saying the words and sentences the way we do. It's a free and easy way to improve your American English skills. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. Four times in the past 18 months, China has carried out hypersonic weapons tests. Hypersonic weapon delivery vehicles can travel at speeds of more than 5 times the speed of sound. China says its most recent test flight was on June 9th. The tests are a sign of the country's continuing efforts to make highly developed weapons. The hypersonic missile delivery vehicles are able to transport nuclear weapons. But China said the tests are, in its words, purely scientific and are not targeted at any country. The United States, Russia, and India have also been developing hypersonic vehicles. One of China's 4 tests reportedly failed, and the United States is far ahead of the Chinese in missile development. But China is developing hypersonic capability and could one day have better delivery vehicles than the United States. So says James Acton of the Nuclear Policy Program and the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace. He spoke recently to members of the U.S. Congress. Mr. Acton said China's hypersonic weapons development program is probably less developed than the American program. But, he said, China might be able to develop its program more quickly. The U.S. military has been testing hypersonic weapon delivery vehicles for the past 5 years. The military completed a fourth successful test 2 years ago. Some experts say hypersonic glide vehicles could be available for use by the armed forces within 5 to 10 years. Morley Stone is Chief Technology Officer for the U.S. Air Force Research Laboratory. He said the military will continue to develop its hypersonic capability. He said the military knows it is going to need weapons that can travel faster than those deployed by other countries. He says the U.S. must continue its research efforts. Mr. Acton agrees that the United States has a more advanced hypersonic weapons program. But he thinks China's hypersonic weapons are still a serious threat to the U.S. because there is no way to defend large areas against them. In recent years, U.S. lawmakers expressed concern about China's development of hypersonic technologies. Some said that the United States is falling behind China in the hypersonic arms race. Buck McKeon of California was a member of the House of Representatives until early this year. He also served as chairman of the House Armed Services Committee. He and two other members of the committee released a statement after China's first test of hypersonic vehicles last year. The statement said cuts in military spending have hurt America's technological advantage. It said the Chinese and other nations are seeking to become as powerful militarily as the United States. In some cases, it added, they appear to be leaping ahead of us. American officials hope the United States can keep its lead in being able to launch targeted missile strikes quickly. They say such a lead can persuade possible enemies from launching attacks. Now, it's time for our weekly look at the latest technology news. There were 5.4 million cyber attacks recorded last year in Kenya. That is more than double the number recorded in 2013. Most of the attacks involved financial crimes or targeted information infrastructure like computer systems. The targets were Kenyan government agencies, other groups, and private citizens. Many computer users wonder what they should be doing to guard against possible online attacks. Jonathan Evans now tells us about a program that is designed to protect Kenya's information technology.
Felix Ngugi is a 22-year-old information technology student. He is taking a 2-year-long class. The course helps students learn how to secure information stored on computers. It tells them about computer hacking and tests their anti-hacking proficiency. Students pay $10 a year for the cost of software programs and use of computer servers. Felix Ngugi says $10 is a small price for the knowledge and experience offered by the course.
Why we are learning this is to be able to secure the people who are innocently being attacked by people who know computers and to protect their data and information from getting out to the open.
Kenya is listed as one of the countries most likely to face cyber threats. Kenya's Ministry of Information and Communication says that in 2013, the country had 31 million users of mobile devices. It adds that 13 million others used the internet. Cybercrime is estimated to cost the world economy more than $500 billion a year. The African Union is taking steps to fight cybercrime. Its members created the AU Convention on Cybersecurity and Data Protection. Yet, the agreement has yet to be approved by a single country. Fred Wahomi is an expert on information technology.
One of the challenges that came up is that the member states were not consulted on these issues. So you'll find countries like Kenya, human rights organizations, and some of the universities, they opposed that convention based on those facts that there were it could actually hamper the issues of human rights.
I'm Jonathan Evans.
Thanks, Jonathan. That's our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Making of a Nation is coming up next.
We continue the story of the American Revolution. The year was 1775.
You won't find programs like this anywhere else. You'll hear from Steve Ember, the host of the program. Steve worked at the Voice of America for almost 30 years. He retired more than a year ago, but we are lucky that he stays in touch with his former colleagues. The Making of a Nation program began in 1969, and at one time was heard weekly, then twice a week. It is now heard Monday through Friday here on the Voice of America. It tells about the social changes, events, documents, and personalities that shaped the United States and helped it have an influence on world history. And it explains the reasons the country's leaders made their decisions. The Making of a Nation is coming up next. If you have a question or comment about this program, send us an email. Our address is learningenglish@voanews.com. That's learningenglish@voanews.com. And please know this. We read every message you send us. You can also follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, iTunes, Twitter, and on our YouTube channel, all at VOA Learning English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. For all of the women and men of the Voice of America all around the world, thanks for spending some time with us today. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is. from the Voice of America.
From VOA Learning English, this is The Making of a Nation, American History in Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of the American Revolution. The year was 1775. Colonists in Massachusetts had fought battles with British troops in the towns of Lexington and Concord. War had not been declared, but citizen soldiers in each of the 13 American colonies were ready to fight. Who was going to organize the colonists into an army? This was the first question that faced the Second Continental Congress when delegates met in May in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. The delegates decided that the man for the job was George Washington. He had experience fighting in the French and Indian War. He seemed to know more than any other colonist about being a military commander. The delegates elected him as commander-in-chief of the Continental Army. He accepted the position, but said he would not take any money for leading the new army. George Washington left Philadelphia for Massachusetts, where he took command on July 3, 1775.
He was tall, he was very elegant, very well put together.
Jane Gordon at the Massachusetts Historical Society says Washington looked very impressive.
It's very interesting because when he came to take command of the Continental Army, many of the New England soldiers were not quite sure what to make of this man who was, after all, from Virginia, not from New England. Washington won them over. His conduct, his grace, I think his discipline was extremely important.
Back in Philadelphia, the delegates to the Second Continental Congress made one more attempt to prevent war with Great Britain. They sent another message to King George. They asked him to consider their problems and try to find a solution. The king would not even read the message. You might wonder, why would the delegates try to prevent war if the people were ready to fight? The answer is that most of the members of the Congress and most of the colonists were not yet ready to break away from England. They continued to believe they could have greater self-government and still be part of the British Empire. Jane Gordon at the Massachusetts Historical Society says many colonists felt conflicted and confused about their identity.
They're Englishmen, they're still Englishmen, but they're not Englishmen. All along, what they've wanted is just to have the rights of Englishmen, and it doesn't seem to be possible under an old system.
A major battle took place in June of 1775, just 2 days after the delegates in Philadelphia chose George Washington as commander. It was the first major battle of the American Revolution. It was called the Battle of Bunker Hill, although it really involved two hills, Bunker and Breeds. Both are just across the Charles River from the city of Boston. Massachusetts soldiers dug positions on Breed's Hill. The British started to attack from across the river. The Americans had very little gunpowder. They were forced to wait until the British had crossed the river and were almost on top of them before they fired their guns. Their commander reportedly told them not to fire on the British
until they saw the whites of their eyes. The British climbed the hill. The Americans fired. A second group of British soldiers climbed the hill. The Americans fired again. The third time, the British reached the top, but the Americans were gone. They had left because they had no more gunpowder. Peter Drummy, a librarian at the Massachusetts Historical Society, reads part of a letter that a young soldier wrote to his mother.
I was in the fort when the enemy came in, jumped over the wall, and ran half a mile, where balls, that is, musket balls, flew like hailstones and cannon roared like thunder.
The British captured Breed's Hill, but Peter Drummy says the Americans still considered the battle a kind of victory.
The paradox is, even though the American forces are defeated and forced off the hill, nevertheless, the British casualties are so high that it is at least a moral victory.
Even the young American soldier who fled the battle wrote to his mother that he would continue fighting for American independence.
And in fact, that's probably what the British learned from this battle, that they could capture this hill at great cost, but the New England countryside is full of hills, and they couldn't capture them all back.
That battle also reduced whatever hope was left for a negotiated settlement. King George declared the colonies to be in open rebellion. The American colonists fought several battles against British troops in 1775. Yet, the colonists were still not ready to declare war. Then, the following year, the British decided to use Hessian soldiers to fight against the colonists. Hessians were mostly German mercenaries who fought for anyone who paid them. The colonists feared these soldiers and hated the British for using them. In January of 1776, Thomas Paine published a document that strongly influenced the colonists. He named the pamphlet Common Sense. It attacked King George as well as the idea of a monarchy, a government led by a king or queen. The pamphlet called for independence. About 150,000 copies of Common Sense were sold in the colonies. Everyone talked about it. As a result, the Second Continental Congress began to act. It opened American ports to foreign shipping. It urged colonists to establish state governments and to write constitutions. On June 7, 1776, Virginia delegate Richard Henry Lee proposed a resolution for independence. The resolution was not approved immediately. Declaring independence was an extremely serious step. Signing such a document would make the delegates traitors to Britain. They would be killed if captured by the British. The delegates wanted the world to understand what they were doing and why. So they appointed a committee to write a document giving the reasons for their actions. One member of this committee was Thomas Jefferson of Virginia. He had already written a report criticizing the monarchy. So the other committee members asked him to write the new document. They said he was the best writer in the group. They were right. Jefferson was 33 years old. It took him 17 days to write the document. The Second Continental Congress approved it on July 4, 1776. It was America's Declaration of Independence. Historian Gordon Wood at Brown University says the Declaration was a message to the world.
They are trying to, I think, signal to the world We are a new nation. We've broken away from this other nation. We're a separate nation, and we want recognition of our independence.
The Declaration of Independence begins with these words.
When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation.
The Declaration goes on to say,
we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government.
The British believed that the Americans were violating British law. Jefferson argued that the British treatment of the American colonies violated the natural laws of God. This idea of natural law had been expressed by British and French philosophers more than 100 years earlier. Jefferson had studied these philosophers in school, but in writing the Declaration of Independence, he said the words came straight from his heart. The Declaration goes on to list 27 complaints against the king. There are complaints against taxes without the consent of the colonists and against the presence of British troops in the colonies. After the list, Jefferson went on to write this statement.
That these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. That they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Great Britain is and ought to be totally dissolved. And that as free and independent states, they have the full power to levy war, conduct peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do.
Jefferson concluded the Declaration with a line that was meant to persuade the delegates to support the most serious step, revolution.
And for the support of this Declaration, with the firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor.
Delegates to the Continental Congress approved and signed the Declaration of Independence on July 4th, 1776. The new country, called the United States of America, was at war with Britain. Yet, not everyone in the former colonies agreed on the decision. That will be our story next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. The words of Thomas Jefferson were spoken by Christopher Cruz. I'm Steve Ember.